Well, it's 9 a.m. February 12th, 2020. I'd like to call this personnel committee meeting to order. Acknowledge that the public and press have been duly notified in accordance with the Freedom of Information Act. And let's note that everyone's here, all members and all appropriate staff. First item on the agenda is approval of previous meeting minutes. Do I have a motion?
I move that we approve.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Motion passes. Moving on to citizen comments. We have a citizen here. Please come join us. Good morning.
Good morning. Elizabeth Campson, 32 Intercoastal Court. And I'm here today to, well, one, because I haven't been to one ever, and I'm interested in just hearing how you operate. But two, I was particularly interested in the new business items. I would just like to say that I honestly believe that our employees are our most valuable asset here at the city. And so I completely understand the discussions revolving around cost of living adjustments, pay increases, merit versus cost of living. And I have been paying attention on kind of a broader budget level, though I'm not great with budget at all. But I felt like last year we kind of made a step in the right direction towards our comprehensive plan goal that says that we need to kind of keep an eye on our personnel costs, because at that point they were driving 3/4 of our general fund was being sucked up by them. And we were encouraged to constantly scrutinize, you know, any long-term personnel costs that could be associated, you know, with any of the, with those wage and compensation things. So just as you move forward discussing the potential of a cost of living adjustment being added back, I think one budget cycle after being removed, I'm not aware of anything that's changed drastically in our budget that has increased our revenues to an extent that we perhaps should be considering that again. Not because I don't understand the want or the need perhaps at times, but I just, we're kind of a fixed revenue stream, and it just concerns me a little bit that perhaps we're starting to look at that again so soon. So I'm just here to listen,
okay.
But I appreciate everything y'all do.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Any more citizen comments? What are you hiding back there? All right, moving on to old business. Item A, consideration of applications to fill vacancy in the Planning Commission.
So at the last meeting, if I may, Chair, I was asked to look at some of the older applications that we had received in previous years and reach out to those folks to see if they were interested and being considered for this vacancy. We did reach out, left messages only, and directed folks to the online application, because the application that we have now was different from the application that they would have filled in years ago. One person expressed interest. There were a few others that we were not able to reach over the phone. We left messages describing, you know, what the call was about and pointing them in the direction for the online application. And then we received a resume from one of the ladies that has applied before, and she has not yet submitted the online application. But we're expecting that hopefully this week.
So we expect moving from 12 to 13?
Correct. We would have one more as of right now. So I do think that because the next step would be you all deciding who to interview, we can move forward and get some interviews scheduled. And if that application comes in, you all could consider it as part of that group. But again, I don't know if y'all want us to reach out again and, you know, I guess be more aggressive trying to get some of these folks to reapply. But that depends on whether or not they're still interested.
Desiree, there were a number of them that you attempted to make contact?
Yes.
Only one responded?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
You got one response.
Yeah, because some of the folks that were considered before had already submitted new applications. So they're already in your list that you received last month.
They're already part of the dozen
Correct.
That we have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that particular... On, I guess we haven't put like a hard stop.
We have not.
Of like response. How,
when we did. Yes, we did. Last year, December 30th was the deadline.
I mean, for the new reach out.
Oh no.
Okay, it's sort of just. When did you reach out to them? The 7th?
Last week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you
Early
make contact? Did you have successful contact with most of them?
At least voicemail. Those that we didn't talk to, we left a message.
I'm just trying to think about like just the timing of somebody getting voicemail and then taking action.
Well, we can reach out again this week.
One more time to call quits.
One more time.
I would be in favor of that. Just one more attempt in case they missed the message somehow, and then after another week.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I'm okay with that. I don't have a strong position. I would be perfectly fine saying we've given, in my opinion, we posted online, we've reached out and left a voicemail.
Right.
If someone, most people get their voicemail the day it's left. You might not call somebody back the next day, but if in this case where the deadline was already passed, so I'm perfectly okay if you both think. I don't think we won't really take much action before our meeting in March. So the main thing that I want, the timeline that I want to keep at least, is that we, before the next meeting, that we have our feedback to Desiree so that the next meeting we can figure out who we're going to interview. Mm-hmm. That's just sort of the goal that I have in mind is our March agenda meeting is let's identify our interviewees and work on scheduling those interviews.
So once Desiree does that and has that fine line list, we get copies of them, so forget the other ones. These are the ones who really actively resubmitted correctly, so we can look at those ourselves. Also, you know, we've got a number of people who've offered to do it. There's only one position. And now the city council is wanting to create a citizens advisory board for the swimming pool concept. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of those people would be good to serve on that since they've already offered up their time to try to help the city. I'm just throwing that out there as people who are expressing interest. That's a whole other committee,
It's a second to one other thing I wanted to mention on this item.
Okay, then. I'll just try to help you out there.
Yeah, it's a great set. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I had a chance to speak with the chair of the Planning Commission a couple weeks ago. And one of the things that emerged for me was a shift in my understanding of the Planning Commission. And it's going to impacts the way that I want to interview and who I want to consider for interviewing. And I'll start off by kind of sharing my original kind of perception of the Planning Commission was really shaped on the projects that the Planning Commission was working on when I first started. And really to date, they've been highly infrastructure intensive in terms of looking at drainage, and from my perspective, I felt like that's why I really anchored on the idea of like engineering being such a critical skill. And in talking to the chair, it really emerged that that's part of it, and that's part of the types of projects that the Planning Commission takes on. But really, he used an analogy that I liked, which is that the Planning Commission is sort of like the R&D department of the city. And that their charter is, you know, to dig really deep into the issues and come up with here are basically feasible options based on what city council is directing us to do. We're going to dig in, do a whole mess of research to figure out which solutions make sense and or are feasible. And it's fairly simple and straightforward, but for me it was a little bit radical in terms of shifting my mindset towards the Planning Commission. And the conversation sort of got there because the pool came up, and that came up. The chair said this is a perfect thing for the Planning Commission to help with, because this is what we do, and it removes some of the politics of City Council from projects like that. And he sort of lamented that maybe if the Planning Commission had been more involved in the marina project versus City Council sort of driving a lot of the research and conceptual driving, that maybe we might have gotten to a different outcome, or at least it might have reduced the politicizing essentially of that topic. Whether or not that's true doesn't really matter. We'll never know. But I think the point to me was well made, and so I talked to him, and I've spoken to city administrator a little bit about involving the Planning Commission. I think that the role of the Planning Commission is different than the role of the Citizen Advisory Board, and so it doesn't negate their role and the need that we have for them, because really the Planning Commission is. It is sort of infrastructure. It goes everything from like what are the financial implications, what are the infrastructure implications, what are sort of just the layout and all the implications for the rec center and in it, parking and all of those really critical details that go into it. A lot of things that we're planning to probably pay someone to do, there's a lot that the Planning Commission could take on for us at free of cost because they're volunteers. My point being, number one, the shift in mindset is what he felt like is important in somebody on the Planning Commission is that they are capable and excited about doing research and understanding issues because just because you're an engineer doesn't necessarily mean that you understand rentals. And you need to, if you're on the Planning Commission, you're going to have to do a lot of research to get up to speed on various topics that might not be in your wheelhouse. And so looking for somebody that has either demonstrated track record or some sort of evidence that they're going to be able to and be excited about doing the level of research that's needed. And he felt like, you know, the current Planning Commission, they've got a great group of people who do that. They really dig in. And he used the example of, you know, we've got a doctor on the Planning Commission. And that particular individual, he felt like, always really understood the issues and brought a different perspective because of his background. So I just wanted to throw that out there because for me it was a little illuminating. And helped shape the way that I'm considering the Planning Commission vacancy. And then the other thing to the pool issue is I think it would be really helpful to involve the Planning Commission. And I agree with you that we've got these folks. Now we have an outlet to where we can say, you weren't selected for the Planning Commission. We have this other short-term project-based initiative, and you're welcome to apply for that.
Got a question, Mr. Chairman, an observation, too. So, and I get that. I get what you're saying in the conversation you had with the chairman. I had sort of a similar conversation with him as well. One thing that was brought up also was the importance of having someone on the Planning Commission that was indeed a resident of Wild Dunes mm-hmm. and understood what was going on in mm-hmm. Wild Dunes, because there are things that are different inside the gate than outside the gate. So mm-hmm. that was one point that was made also. But getting back to the comments you made about the Planning Commission, I mean, at what point would we bring them in, or would they be brought in to all of these other committees that are looking at different things, like the pool? And would that be something they initiate, or would mm-hmm. that be something that Desiree would be liaison for? How would that look?
So then, I don't know. Just a like point of order. I mean, I think we're talking about the Planning Commission, so it makes sense. But we'll mm-hmm. be careful not to like get too into.
Yeah, I'll just one comment. You know, the role of the Planning Commission is they're an advisory group, and they will advise council on policies and issues related to land use, community development, and planning. And they report to full council. So they typically, I guess, the way that they have functioned recently is they take a project. You know, they were included in the marina discussion and presented recommendations to city council, and then after that, city council sort of continued research through the real property committee. They did the same similar approach to the sewer project, and they worked for about 2 years on that, getting experts on the table, talking to the Water and Sewer Commission, and so their role is to really make recommendations to council. But council can direct and say, you know, we would like the Planning Commission to take a look at this issue. But it should fit within the statutory requirements and roles and responsibilities of the Planning Commission. So community development, land use, planning, zoning type of issues. But they're really an advisory group that works for city council.
Mr. Chairman, I had one more thing.
Yep.
You know, they were tasked several years ago. We had a public forum, and we asked our residents, what were the top topics? Mm-hmm. And we heard drainage.
Mm-hmm. Drainage.
And, you know, that's over the last year and a half, we had a project back on Forest Trail where a developer was taking three lots to make them into five lots. And, you know, we had a minimum lot size of 17,500 feet. And because of that, they could create five lots. And because of the Planning Commission, they came in there and said, all right, we're going to be more proactive. And so we increased our lot size from 17,500 to 35,000 square feet. We reduced the lot coverage from 40% to 35%. We are going from concrete driveways to pervious driveways. So, I mean, they've done some great jobs that really affect... Mm-hmm. the quality of life on Isle of Palms, which I consider mm-hmm. what their job was.
Absolutely.
And I thought they were all positive things it did for us.
Same thing with the short-term rentals. Y'all mm-hmm. heard a presentation last month about the work that they did and the recommendations for you all to consider related mm-hmm. to short-term rentals. So mm-hmm. the swimming pool discussion would be, you know, they don't have, I don't think they have a big project now, so it would be perfect timing to get them involved mm-hmm. at that level. Okay, so I have received some emails, communication from folks that recently submitted an mm-hmm. application for the Planning Commission. So I'd like to get a timeline
yeah.
set in place so that they understand what the expectations are.
Mm-hmm.
So sure. Is the goal for next month for the committee to make a down selection on those candidates that will be interviewed? Is yeah. that the plan?
I mean, I'll lay out, rehash kind of, or go into more detail of what I just said earlier, because I think that my hope would be that during our March meeting, we identify the interviewees, and coming out of that, city staff schedules the interviews during March. And then for the, I guess, I don't know if it would be possible for us to do the interviews prior to city council and then make the recommendation in the March city council meeting. I guess we're either making recommendations in the March city council or in the April city council meeting. And
yeah.
If we only have to interview three people, which is my goal, then we should be able to do the second week of March, do the interviews. It's pretty straightforward to make a decision from there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could have a special personnel meeting,
mm-hmm.
Maybe just before, just after Ways and Means, and then make a recommendation to council in March.
Well, y'all could do too. The way we handle the sewer vacancies, where because the three of you are going to be interviewing these candidates, it has to be an advertised meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're already going to have a special mm-hmm. personnel meeting in place. So mm-hmm. after the last interview, if y'all
yeah.
feel comfortable with making a recommendation, then
yeah.
y'all could do it at that time as well.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Sounds good to me as well.
That way we can put it on the agenda for March for council to approve.
Yeah, so the goal at least is a selection made in March, and then they wouldn't be able to go to the April Planning Commission meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And Desiree, you still have, there's a resume outstanding with the one person that got back with you as well.
Correct. We received her resume, and she was directed to fill the application online.
Okay. But she's not done that yet.
Correct.
And it sounded like from both of you, you'd like for Desiree City staff to reach back out to whichever of the seven didn't answer the phone.
Yes.
Just to make sure we
didn't give them
drop through clack by accident.
Sure.
You know, exactly. Because it happens.
Just out of curiosity, how many voicemails out of seven?
Ooh, I have to ask.
One person.
Yeah,
applied,
I think four.
Okay.
There were
it's only a few phone calls.
Yeah, it was a few. Yeah, it's no big deal.
Okay. Okay, moving. Anything else with that?
No.
All right, moving on to old business B, review of general government FY21 capital expenditures.
All right, so you have in your packet the general government and building department's 10-year capital plan and FY21 scheduled capital expenditures. Those include $15,000 for replacing the framing and metal doors at City Hall. The last time we received pricing for that, it was around the $15,000 range. That's why it would not be enough for the building maintenance contingency to cover that. So we may just increase that building maintenance contingency to add more funds to be able to do the replacement of the framing of the doors. But we're still actively looking for updated numbers for that project. $30,000, that is a placeholder for the court software. Talking to the clerk of court, she's already reached out to other clerks of courts in the neighboring municipalities to get names of different vendors that could potentially supply our replacement software. We're going to be issuing an RFP. We have been using the same program for a long time, but I think that there it's very likely that there are a lot of programs out there that maybe a lower cost and could offer more services than what we're used to. So that's in progress. And we are rebudgeting the expense related to the Forest Trail residents that received a grant from FEMA to elevate his home. The property owner has been having issues with the proposals he's been receiving for elevating his home. It's the proposals and the quotes he has been getting are higher than what the grant is for. So he's currently actively working with FEMA to try to increase the grant for that project. So this is just a rebudget, and it offsets. FEMA won't issue those payments directly to the resident. They have to be through the city because the city was the applicant for that grant. So we'll receive those funds from FEMA, and then the city will then distribute those funds to the property owner.
So it's just a pass-through?
Correct. It's just a pass-through, but we have to budget for it. And then the revenue is included in the general fund revenues as a grant revenue. So you'll see that there. And then that's it. The only thing that we have on building department is that maintenance contingency fund based on 1% of the insured value of the building, and we split that between general government and the building department.
Any questions? Other questions?
Not for me.
That's good.
We're going to fix our handrail, right?
One thing that, it's not in the capital plan, but we have been talking about changing the setup of this room. We use it a lot for committee meetings and planning commission, and it'll be in the non-capital tools and equipment because it wouldn't be over $5,000, so it wouldn't be capitalized. But if you have any ideas of the, if you like the setup here, maybe you have a bigger table or a round table. These chairs are like 30 years old and they're not very comfortable, and sometimes they don't work very well. We were thinking about replacing them this year if possible, but that won't be in the, that's not in the 10-year capital plan. So we'll discuss it in the operational, but that would be the only difference for the general government fund.
How many years or decades have we been talking about replacing the council chamber chairs?
A long time, and it's always deferred. I guess if it's, it works, but here, I would prefer a different setup. It just feels messy and not very professional. So we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, what would you prefer? I mean, just as the city administrator, what type of setup do you envision?
I'm not sure, but I will find out.
Just not this one.
Well, this works, and at the end of the day,
I don't think you like all this stuff.
But yeah, this all, in the middle of the table, it's just uncomfortable and messy, and I think that we can find something that's, reasonable that would serve us well. But that may be a wish list. It's okay. That's all I have.
Cool. All right, moving on to new business. Item A, discussion reinstating a cost of living adjustment for employees. Mr. Mayor, if you want
to... Yeah, I would like to add to that, and I do appreciate Elizabeth's coming in and her comments. I'm out there, and I talk to our police. I talk to our fire. I don't hear it as much from Public Works, but we are a training ground for police and fire, and they come out here and we get great training. But there are actually bounties on Facebook for those who live in North Charleston, Hanahan, and other locations to bring in one of our officers. They get a bonus for signing up one of our officers. Our officers can't afford to live out here. They all have to travel in to get here. I don't think they feel that we understand their needs and their costs, whether it's, we did the merit pay, and merit pay is a few select out of a department, whereas the cost of living is something that's going to affect each and every one of them. And to me, it's just a way of saying thank you to each and every one of our employees. Not so much a thank you, but really a cost of living. Because I look at my cost of living, it goes up. And I don't care what socioeconomic bracket somebody's in, it goes up every year. And I kind of like and feel that we should show that we understand their dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would love to hear what your finger on the pulse and your finger on the pulse as well. But I'll give some context for this decision as part of the personnel committee last year, because up until last year, cost of living was part of just the annual increase, and I don't remember how long it had been, but I want to say it was like 2013 or 2012 when they initially made it standardized. But it's okay, it doesn't really matter when.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We did include a cost of living last year because
it was in the budget.
It was in the budget, and we felt like the message to the to our staff was, hey, this is something that we've already planned for, so you should be expecting it. And we didn't, it felt like taking something away versus this year, where it has not been included. We have not yet budgeted it. The calendar versus fiscal gets confusing with COLA.
Mm-hmm.
The point being, last year we said let's move to pure merit, and that way we can toggle up the people who really need to be toggled up, because the merit is a pool versus the straight flat. And I know that what you're suggesting doesn't get rid of merit. The challenge that we were addressing was the compounding impact of a cost of living across the board, and we did look at a few different municipalities around the state and saw what they did. And frankly, what I recall is there was a pretty wide, diverse mix of combinations of things that people did. Some people didn't have anything at all in terms of policy. Some people had straight merit. Some people had only COLA. And some people had the combo like we had. I think the combo was actually the least common,
mm-hmm.
Where people were doing, usually it was one or the other,
right.
Or nothing. And it was sort of, it seemed like a year, but it would presumably a year by year basis on what they would do. Recognizing that we control the largest portion, this committee, the largest portion of the operating budget. It's a big deal. And as we look at, you know, what you're bringing up is the concern over turnover, and it's a very real concern. I mean, from a morale standpoint and from a, like, we want our team to be happy, that's an obvious, everyone's going to agree with that, everyone's going to say, yes, we want to do that. But ultimately, what we're talking about is staff turnover. And staff turnover comes from a lot of different things. And over the last couple of years, I would say particularly with, you know, bringing in our new chief, we addressed some of the core things with turnover. My personal philosophy or perspective is that pay isn't going to cost someone to stay, but it will cost someone to leave. So you have to be getting paid enough. If you're not getting paid enough, you're probably going to leave. No matter how good you're getting treated, no matter how great your boss is, if you're not getting paid enough, you're going to leave.
Right.
But you might be getting paid a ton of money and have a horrible boss, but the pay isn't going to keep you there long term. That's my personal perspective. So you're attacking, I think, it the right way, because what we're trying to do is prevent people from leaving because they're not getting paid enough. So I just want to set that as like kind of the foundation, why we did this, where I stand on cost of living and where I stand on just pay in general. the merit increase gives full control, a lot of control to the department heads and the city administrator to figure out who is it that is most deserving of the pay increase, and who is it that needs the biggest increase. And I personally like that approach. I feel like with the again, looking at the perspective of what did we address last year when we decided to remove cost of living, it's hard to justify something that has such significant compounding interest when we as long as we have a mechanism to get people to the right salaries and show them that they're fairly compensated. All the other stuff has to be in place. All of the good leadership, the engagement, all the ongoing things that good leaders and good bosses should do has to be there. And I think we've got a great leadership team in place from our city staff to our department heads, to our HR officer. We've got a lot of great people and programs in place to keep people engaged. So I'm giving all of this preface because then I want to turn it over to city staff. And, you know, we did a lot of studies on competitive pay. And if we feel like we're not competitive anymore, then that's a different question. But I think a blanket cost of living increase is not the solution to preventing turnover, in my opinion. Because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep our great staff here. And obviously we want them to feel loved and taken care of. Pay is one way to do that, but it's really not. I mean, all the studies show, like, if you give someone an increase, it has such a short-term minimal effect. We have to be giving people a competitive living wage. Get that. But I think we're doing that. So the question is, if we're not doing that, I don't like cost of living because it's just the standardized rubber stamped, we're going to just increase everybody this percentage without necessarily looking at, are we giving a good, fair living, fair competitive wage? That's what I'll say, and I guess before city staff will.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would like to make a few comments, mm-hmm. and I'll try not to be redundant, and be as concise as I can be. But coming from my background in private industry, and one of my many positions I had over the years was vice president of human resources for a company that had over 20,000 associates, and part of what fell under my umbrella was exactly this: merit increases. Mm-hmm. We didn't have cost of living adjustments; that just wasn't part of the equation. Mm-hmm. But the merit pool that we had worked very good. I mean, where you had the flexibility as a manager to evaluate your associates, the ones that were truly doing outstanding got, you know, they got higher increases than others that didn't, and that seemed to work. And we were in a very competitive industry, I might add, one that had a supermarket on every corner. So you were always struggling, you know, to keep the good key associates you had. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of a redundancy here, but I too ascribe to the theory, or not really theory in my opinion, that good leadership and competitive wages trumps all. I mean, if you've got, you know, if you're being competitive with your pay scales, with what you're giving your associates to for their work, and if you have good leadership in place, that means a lot. I understand that there's going to be pressure sometimes, you know, for people, you know, bounties and trying to certainly recruit our employees or our associates, however we refer to them. But that's just, I mean, that's just the way, that's the nature of business, and also I'm sure the, you know, the nature of the city here, that you're going to have those kind of pressures. So I hesitate. I mean, I went back and looked and saw that, you know, last year, I mean, we pulled COLA out of the budget. And that was in the June meeting, I guess, where that was finalized last year. And I'm hesitant about looking at cost of living adjustment because even though I haven't dug into the expenses, I know, John, you did last year with the personnel committee, and I guess there are a lot of compounding costs, things like that, that really affect that and make that a pretty large expense. And you mentioned also, Mr. Chairman, that you all had done a lot of research with other municipalities and found that most of them did not have COLA increases. Most of them
Most of them didn't have a combo of merit.
A combo. Okay. All right. So I'm in the camp of really not looking at cost of living adjustments myself, based on what I know at this point. Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear from Desiree and Gwinnett.
Sure, yes.
For some reactions and thoughts.
I think everybody here wants our employees to be properly compensated. We obviously want to have a competitive talent pool because the mayor is right. I mean, there mm-hmm. are municipalities, all of our neighboring municipalities are actively pursuing our folks. Mm-hmm. You know, we have fabulous employees that they're trained, and you know, I've heard it being referred to as a talent war. I mean, mm-hmm. there is a conscious effort at getting people that are already trained, that have experience in a good municipality. So that is a true concern. And I think that for us is making sure that the salaries and the compensation packages that we offer our employees are competitive when compared to other municipalities. You know, it's difficult to compare apples to apples because, you know, you can't really compare us to North Charleston and to, you know, their ability to compensate may be larger than ours. But what else are we offering our employees to incentivize them to stay? Folly Beach recently did a compensation study. We've been trying to get a copy of them, of that document, because the last time that the city did this was in 2007. Mm-hmm. Last year, we discussed the possibility of having a compensation study done, maybe picking some of the key positions, public safety, you know, police and fire, but really all across the board, because it's not only police and fire. They are our biggest departments, but across the board, we want to make sure that everybody is at the right place and be, you know, just compensated properly. You know, I go back to, you know, we have a great compensation package. You know, the city offers health insurance, a pension plan, so that all adds up together. And, you know, what Chair Moy was talking earlier, when we looked at this compounding effect, the history of the city offering a combination of merit and COLA, it amounted to about 5.5 increase every year. And when you look at, you know, you look at the impact of that in 5-10 years, maybe in 1 year it's not much, but when you look at the impact, the compounding impact is significant. I think that there are several opportunities here, but I do think that we really need to be intentional about getting a study done or getting some people involved, maybe a third party involved in analyzing our staff workloads and just comparing us to other municipalities. Sound of Mount Pleasant is going through that process right now. I don't know, you know, I've been trying to get copies of these compensation studies, and I don't know why people are kind of,
you know, paying for it.
And, you know, I have great relationships with all of those administrators, but, you know, just to remind everybody, I think the last time that the city did this, back in 2007, before went out of my time here, but all we hear, it was very, it caused a huge morale issue. Because the recommendations that were presented by that third-party company when they did a wage study was not implemented by council. It was just too much, and council did not feel like it could make those recommendations happen at that time. And there were some adjustments made in some departments, but it did not really, it really didn't look at the whole city as a whole. So, you know, you have here a compensation plan prepared by a third-party expert who says, yes, these folks are underpaid, and then council doesn't implement those recommendations. And, you know, that could be a morale booster. No, not booster, the opposite.
It hits morale.
Yes, it hits morale. Thank you. So, you know, I just want to make people aware of that, because I hear, it was before my time, and I still hear how people felt when that happened. So, you know, if we are going to go look and get a compensation study done, then, you know, we have to be prepared, I guess, for when those recommendations come. We have done internally some studies of some positions. Y'all recall we did so for the police department recently, and incorporated some of those adjustments. But I think that, you know, our folks see what's happening in other municipalities when they are having a cost of living expenses. And I think at the end of the day, it may not be a lot, you know, for somebody who's making $39,000, you know, the bottom line of a COLA adjustment, it's not much, but it means a lot to them. And I don't know if it's because they, you know, we have a staff that was used to receiving that, and suddenly, you know, we're not anymore. And, you know, we're only eligible to receive a 2.5 merit, and again, that depends on performance. It just feels like it was a huge shift. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that with leadership, you try to explain that to employees, and it's up to us as the department heads to make sure that employees understand why those changes happen. But at the bottom line is, you know, they don't see their paychecks growing, and they see the cost of living growing, and then, you know, their salaries stay the same or you know, don't grow as much as they have grown in the past. So, you know, I recognize, because I hear it from my mm-hmm. employees all the time, that, you know, it is something that hurts them, and, you know, it hurts their morale. But I also understand that I have another responsibility to be, you know, to be fiscal conservative and to be, you know, put together recommendations that make sense to council that look at the overall picture. So, you know, there may be opportunities about increasing the merit percentage. Mm-hmm. Maybe 2.5 is not quite enough. Maybe we could do 3. We're still going to be lower than what we have been in the past with a combination of COLA and merit, but that may be something that council wants to consider. The whole idea of moving to a merit is to really make sure that you're compensating folks that are going above and beyond, and you create an incentive for employees to go above and beyond, rather than just, you know, getting. An automatic increase every year. So there's just policy and ideology, you know, mm-hmm. ideological differences between the two. And when you look at other municipalities, Chair, it's correct. You know, it's all over the place. There's no clear guidance. You know, there are people who the COLA percentages are different for those that have COLA. The merit is different. The way that the merit is applied is different. So, you know, we look at other municipalities to get guidance to see, you know, how are the people doing it, and with this, it's just very difficult to get some clarity on, you know, what should we do, what should we consider, so which makes it somewhat challenging when you're trying to compare, you're competing with these folks for talent all the time.
And so. Sorry if I can react to one thing that you said. I do want to hear your thoughts on the matter. This is the year that I think we would expect to hear the most about it, because this is the first paycheck period that the COLA has not been implemented.
Mm-hmm.
So, the comments on expectations were, I think, really salient. That we've got. That's part of my concern with COLA, is we establish this expectation, which if that's what we want to establish, that's okay. But that's part of the challenge that we're up against now, where the preference that I personally have is similar to Councilmember Streetman, that I would prefer merit, and whether or not we increase the merit, I think that would be something that would be a little bit more certainly palatable to me. But I think having the expectation that I'm, no matter how I perform, no matter what I do, I'm going to get an increase, is not necessarily where I land. That is contingent, though. I'll keep going back to this. It's all predicated upon confidence that we're paying a competitive wage. Because if we're not paying a competitive wage, then this is all thrown out the window. And that was the studies that I referred to in my comments were what the city staff did, where we looked at. What are other public safety folks getting paid around the area, and how do we compare, and doing a little bit of right sizing, which we did last year.
I think it's going to be an ugly picture when we get that.
Well, it could be. I mean, when you
well,
look
we did
at
that. Yeah, but
we did that for the police department, and we saw that it was $3,000-$4,000 less. You recall that being so the starting pay for our police officers was maybe $3,000 to $4,000 less than the starting pay of a police officer in our neighboring community. So that's why we went from 39, we increased it to 42 for those that are certified. And that was one of the changes that took place. But if you extrapolate that, then, you know, do we have that same situation happen for other positions as well?
Right.
That's why
mm-hmm.
I think, yes, we focus on police and fire, because that is, we're constantly being, our folks are folk, you know, constantly, debating whether they stay or go. And, you know, yes, a lot of our people don't live in Mount Pleasant or Isle of Palms. They can't afford that. They live out there. So what is the incentive for them to continue to come here, drive 40, 45 minutes every day to come and serve this community, when they could be making maybe even the same in Somerville or Goose Creek, but they don't have the expense to travel here? So that's really the conundrum of our community and our staff that, you know, they do come from far.
If I may, I mean, again, going to private industry, some of the stores that I operated were in resort areas such as this. Of course, you know, Hilton Head, Myrtle Beach, we had the same kind of pressures, you know, people that couldn't actually live in the area that they worked in, and we had to make sure we had a fair wage. I've been, as far as the compensation study, I mean, something like that might be helpful. You know, we did that on a routine basis in the business that I was in, that you would have someone, typically a third party, that would sort of evaluate where you were from a competitive standpoint. So that did, you know, occur from time to time. So that's something that might be considered. I guess another question would be, does the municipal association have info that would help us in looking at that, you know, around the state?
They have a compensation survey that you can look at starting or current positions and current salary compared to other municipalities.
Right.
But the tricky part is that you're not really comparing apples to apples. So it does provide some good guidance, but, you know, I guess it's difficult to compare the Isle of Palms to other communities. You compare it to Sullivan's Island, they don't provide the same level of services. They are not a resort community. It's very residential, so they don't have the same challenges that we have in the season. Folly Beach, it's a lot smaller. Again, they only have, you know, maybe half of the employees that we have, not the same services, not the same level of service. So having a third party come in that can take a look at all that and factor in all of those differences would be beneficial. I just, as an example, Mount Pleasant had a compensation study done maybe 4 or 5 years ago, fairly recent. It just feels like time's flying by, but yeah, around that time. And they implemented a significant increase. I think almost 10% of salaries were increased because they were significantly underfunded. And don't quote me on that, but I recall hearing and reading that it was roughly a 10% adjustment to some or all employees there. So it goes to show you that I think it's important that the city does that, because again, whether we do a COLA or not, if our people are not compensating appropriately, then that's going to be the issue. Mm-hmm. The 1%, 1.2% a year, it's not really going to change that. If you could be getting paid a lot more in a neighboring municipality for the same type of job. But I guess I just want to be cautious that if we do that, then is council going to be committed to implementing those recommendations or not? I guess that's my concern, having staff go through a process that it may not, it may show, maybe we'll get a pat on the back, you know, our people are compensated appropriately. But if not, then that's just going to be, a question and a challenge for us to do. But the city hasn't done that in how long ago? 13 years. And I agree. I think that is something that should happen every 2, 3, maybe 4 years, because the economy just changes and the needs change.
Mr. Chair, maybe we should do this evaluation before we even think about a COLA or a merit pay increase. Let's look at our surrounding communities and see what they're paying. Or better yet, HR? I mean, what suggestions?
Yeah, and a wage and compensation study would be very valuable. Of course, with the caveat, as Desiree said, that, you know, we just have to be very careful of what council ends up doing with it, because you don't want to have the same situation. But a wage and compensation study really would be beneficial, number one, because it will really evaluate the job description. People's job descriptions have changed a lot, and our job descriptions have not kept up with the changes. So that, and then giving a true compensation to that job description, would really benefit, you know, our entire, you know, pay scale and our entire wage study ability. So I think that would be a good starting point in order to see, do we need to do a COLA, do we need to do a larger merit pool? But I think it would give us a very good third-party look at. We've done the Band-Aids. Mm-hmm. We have done those. And, you know, I apologize for calling them Band-Aids, but
that's
they
okay.
have been. And we've needed to do that to stop exodus of very talented people. So I think a wage and compensation study would be very beneficial, done by a third party. I was in a dream world thinking that we could do it on our own. No, we need a third party to come in and do that. To give us a really, really true study on where we're at.
Sorry, just a quick question on that. Because did you say you think we have updated our internal job description so that we're ready for that study? Or that's a prerequisite that we still need to do?
We need to do that. And that's something that
they could do.
The wage and compensation study would take a look at, because they look at all of the components of the job. Mm-hmm. And then make all of those comparisons and recommendations.
And then make they develop what the, depending on what that job description is, mm-hmm. and what the responsibilities are, then that's how they determine what the wage, the appropriate wage would be.
Mm-hmm.
We have initiated that reach out to the companies that are conducting compensation studies for our neighbors, just to get a ballpark number of how much that would be to present to you all. We don't have a number yet, so that we may include it in the budget. But I do think that that is the next step. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about it for 2 years now. You know, I think that everybody is committed to making sure that our employees are properly compensated. And I think we need to answer that question first before we...
Mm-hmm.
I think COLA, increasing COLA or reinstating COLA or increasing merit would be a second part of that conversation once we know where we stand.
Because
it may be that we need to do like targeted adjustments based on those recommendations.
Mm-hmm. So that wasn't on the budget worksheet, but you're trying to get a number that we can put in there. So you're anticipating adding that to the budget.
Yeah, so that would be an operational. So we're looking at capital now.
Okay, sorry.
And,
right.
We have the budget workshop this afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I think it personnel and compensation is on the agenda for discussion with full council.
Mm-hmm.
So we can definitely have this discussion. And we were planning on having this discussion to get the feel for the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is the will of council to pursue this initiative, then we would have a number that we would include in the budget, and then that would be a project for this year to do.
And just so you know, I heard firsthand this weekend from our personnel, we care more about putting a swimming pool in than we do our public safety personnel.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
I was going, wow, that hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I will say, you know, I've had this conversation with individual council members, and I, you know, don't mind saying it publicly, but I think that the way that this conversation is held with council and in the public has to be very cognizant that people are listening and that our employees know that we're, you know, and I'll be there for their biggest advocate. You know, I'm looking out for them. So we just have to make sure that the conversation is done in a way that that our employees appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I think you're spot on there.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. And that's, I was actually, as I was speaking earlier, I caught myself putting my foot in my mouth a couple times because I
do it all the time.
the one thing this will be my last word on the topic is, what I was trying to say is, I think the purpose of putting COLA on the agenda and talking about it, what we're trying to, we're all united in terms of what we want to do, which is we want our
happy.
We want them compensated fairly and competitively, like our team.
Right.
And we don't want them to have to worry about pay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even about worrying about pay. It's you have a job that you've applied to and that you've been recruited for. And you should be compensated competitively for what you're doing.
Our employees would love to hear that.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like we have good next steps on this particular item. It's almost like we can't fix COLA until we've actually addressed it's almost like that's secondary to anything else.
It's like a good appetizer for the budget meeting this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. All right. Related new business B, discussion of establishing a longevity increase adjustment.
So I wanted to bring this to your attention. This is something that the personnel committee looked at last year as well, and no action was taken. But I wanted to bring this up again because it's something that's in our queue, and we talk about it. What are we going to do with this? And this relates for the new members of personnel to those employees that have been with the city for a long time. Therefore, you know, because of their increases, merit and COLA in the past, they've reached the end of their wage range. They're already at that hourly rate and at the top end of their wage range. So currently, the regulations and the rules in our employee handbook, when that happens, is that those employees would not be eligible for any increases that would increase their hourly rate. So we were looking at, you know, that could feel somewhat demoralizing for folks that are great employees, have been with the city for a long time, so have been loyal, good employees, that they're very high performing and are not, you know, they get a really good evaluation, but then because they're already at the end of their wage range, they wouldn't be eligible for either a lump sum payment of what would be the merit increase or any adjustment. So this is something that we developed last year. We looked at it again, and it's very consistent to what other municipalities do in situations like this. They would receive those high-performing employees that receive a really good evaluation would receive either a lump sum or a lump sum payment or pay throughout the course of the year the equivalent of what their merit increase would have been. So if it's a 2.5 increase because you received a 5, you're an excellent employee, then rather than that being applied to their hourly range, which is what happens normally, then they would just receive that evaluation or performance adjustment given to them. We have, last year, how many did we have in this position?
There were 3 that did not receive any increase mm-hmm. at all.
Mm-hmm.
And this year there will be more
mm-hmm.
because of longevity and that they're at the top of their scale.
So we're getting that question. We're starting to get that question from employees. You know, is this something that city council is going to consider or do? You know, and I think that the concern is that gets compounded in their hourly range, and then therefore their hourly rate increases. This adjustment would not do that. It would not compound. It would not increase their hourly rate. So that's just, you know, for discussion. If y'all have any mm-hmm. questions,
can I give a little bit more context before?
Yeah.
Because this is, as Desiree mentioned, we've been chatting about this really for a couple of years because there's a lot of constraints of what we can do with according to code and regulation. And so using some of its terminology and semantics, and frankly, that's what this represents, honestly, is getting the right language so that it's kosher and legal.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, so it's not a bonus, but that's the easiest way to conceptualize it for somebody who's coming into this fresh. You can't call it a bonus because that's not legal, but thinking about it, It's like a bonus. I won't call it a bonus, but it's semantics. Like a bonus.
Well, and they have earned it because of good performance. So it's not like the city's just giving a bonus to employees just because.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a good evaluation based mm-hmm. on the past year's performance.
Mm-hmm. So that was the one piece of context. I have a question for you, but I'll mm-hmm. let Councilmember Streetman go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This one's not a hard sell for me. I mean, we did this in private industry also. I think we called it a lump sum, you know, just as simple as that. But, you know, we had a number of people, typically not at the executive level, but in the, you know, the upper tier of management that would reach the top of their salary range, and they were frozen right there. And we did much the same. If they had high performance evaluation, clearly had excelled in their duties, and we would give them a lump sum increase, which was not burned into the, you know, into mm-hmm. their salary, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm certainly in favor of this type of proposal here myself. So, mm-hmm. I guess a couple of questions I would have about it is, on our annual performance evaluations, are we on a 5-point scale, mm-hmm. 1 to 5? Is that what mm-hmm. we do?
Correct.
Okay, so we think, what is a 3?
Is three that is
doing
meets
everything the job calls for?
Yeah, 3 is meets expectations.
Meeting expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying that if you're just meeting expectations, that you would be eligible for this.
Correct, and that's up for just a part mm-hmm. of the proposal. You know, mm-hmm. we can definitely discuss if we feel more comfortable with a 4. That means excelling. Mm-hmm.
Right. That's where I was going mm-hmm. because you know, in my past life, what we did is if you were meeting expectations, you may not necessarily get this, but mm-hmm. if you were exceeding expectations,
enjoying your job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then clearly exceeding your expectations based on your performance mm-hmm. evaluation, then mm-hmm. you certainly were eligible for it, and it was awarded.
You know, sometimes it's not always about money. And Wynette did a great job, city staff did a great job doing the Employee Appreciation Day 2 years ago, and we did it again this past year. Today is Joseph Washington's birthday,
mm-hmm.
39 years with the city. He's not one of our upper executives, but please reach out and say happy birthday to Joe, because little things like that mean a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just that recognition of, hey, mm-hmm. thank you.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people, I guess, to piggybacking on something that you said, was it you or John? Where the employees that have reached the end of their wage range they're not supervisors, they're not, you know, department heads. We're talking about folks from our public works department, right. Fire department, or firefighters, mm-hmm. captains, and. So yeah, it would mean a lot
mm-hmm.
for those employees that have been here, by virtue of being here for that long. That's how they get to that right. end of the range.
I have the same questions as Councilmember Streetman about the rating.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 seem like the threshold, and I wonder, do you know off the top of your head of the 3 or 4 that would have been eligible for this last year, what their performance ratings were at the end of the year?
No, I'd have to go back.
I know 2 of them would have been, they would have excelled.
A 4 above?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So on a percentage, do half of them exceed, at least, of our employees?
On the whole, not just
on the whole. The whole.
What's the average?
I would hope everybody at least meets that minimum
yes.
standard.
Yes. I think it's sort of a bell curve. We have
right.
people fall within the 3 and 4.5
right.
range. So yeah, we have good employees.
Which is that's the answer I want to hear. Is,
yeah. But in terms of from these, what this would apply, you know, the employees this would apply mm-hmm. to, I would have to go back and look at the last year's performance evaluations, because this year's they're still trickling in. But yeah, it would definitely, I think most of them would meet it.
And the other comment I had, other than feeling like the 3 was a low,
mm-hmm.
too low of a bar, was if we conduct this wage study, one of the outcomes might be that we adjust the ranges.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, not that that doesn't serve the long term issue, because this can still happen,
mm-hmm.
but it might, for some of these people, they actually might find themselves not at the top of their pay band anymore.
Correct. That's true. So this might be another, you know, I'm not expecting a decision today. I kind of
yeah.
wanted to put it in your heads and reignite that conversation. But I think if we're pursuing a global conversation about compensation,
mm-hmm.
then that could be part of, you know, the recommendations
mm-hmm.
and the adjustments that are recommended at the end of that process.
I think it would be helpful to have an idea of where our for the budget discussion, to have an idea of how many of our current staff are close to that
yeah.
top of the pay range, and just to start at least get an idea of how this could impact spending on a dollar amount
mm-hmm.
over the next 3 to 5 years based on our current staff.
We can definitely do that. Maybe not for 3 o'clock, but I've set the bar high. Yeah, we can definitely do that report.
How about 4? I'm just joking. Any other questions about that?
No, I'm glad we're going to look at this. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
Same with me.
Yep.
Happy we're looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Concept is a green light from this committee.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Okay. Any miscellaneous business?
Oh, I do want to foreshadow just quickly. My plan for today was to include on the agenda and talk to Chair Moy about including on the agenda, initiating the strategic planning process. It's not really a personnel type thing, but it came out of personnel committee, sort of that initiative for the city to pursue that initiative. I've recommended the city partnering with the College of Charleston Center for Livable Communities just because of low cost alternative. If we go out with a private company, we're looking at the $40,000-$45,000 range. Bob O'Neill, he is a fellow for the Center for Livable Communities, has done this type of work all over the state. He had a passing in his family, so he couldn't be here today, but we'll reschedule that. And then the next committee meeting, just plan on or expect that we're going to have a presentation of that process and what the Joe Riley Center could do for the city for the strategic planning. So just wanted to, on the record, make sure that people know that we're working through that, and our plan was to present it today, but we just unfortunately couldn't. So that'll be in the March agenda.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other? All right, next meeting date, 9 a.m., Tuesday, March 3rd.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, we are adjourned.